Welcome back. Why the fuck are you still there? Yeah, so he handed it back to the Senate.
That's what we're here for, to polish up his knob.
For the honor and the glory of Rome. Fucking love a bit of Christian Slater, man. How many kids do you think are being named Trump right now?
Oh, yeah. That's what victory looks like.
Yeah. It's bullshit.
Forget it. It is tarnishing the reputation of Rome and Augustus.
Rome, if you find a guy hanging upside down from a light pole with spiderweb, I don't think you know the note telling you who it was from, right?
He can go in the history books just for that.
Fucking, what do you call it? Where you march through the streets and get a parade?
Parade?
Scavia.
Scavia. I have no idea.
Thank you for that correction. Right. All done.
Well, speaking of all done.
Aww.
Welcome back to the show, episode 75. Hey, Ray.
Yes.
Hey.
Together, we journey into a world that no longer has an Agrippa in it.
He is all done. So as we mentioned in the last episode, Agrippa's on his way back. He's defeated the Pannonians and their Paninis just by giving him a hard stare and counting to three. And they back the fuck down and put their weapons down and ran away with their tails between the legs. He's on his way back to Rome, gets sick, dies, 51 years old. Out of the blue, no hint, just boom, gone. It's happened so quickly, Augustus can't even get to his bedside in time to say his last goodbyes.
He was moving like the wind. But from what we can tell, this happened pretty, pretty quickly.
Get there in time, but he does have the body carried in state to Rome, where it's given a public funeral and Augustus delivers the eulogy.
You've just got to imagine. I mean, was it an emotional speech? Did he try to hold himself together? Has he already read the will? Does he have a sense or whatever? Do they read the will out during the speech? But yeah, I mean, this just had to be a test of this guy's ability to hold himself together while in front of everybody. But because they are Romans, and we've covered this before, to be emotional about a loss of a friend is not considered unmanly to these people. They were very much into friendships, into families, and it would have been okay if he had sobbed halfway through his speech.
And the great irony of this, of course, is that we've all expected Augustus to die first. He's been the sickly one. He's been the one that's been on death's doorstep time and time again. Not for some time now, for some reason. The hot baths,
it's
cold baths, hot baths.
Cold compressed.
Fixed. Genius.
Did the trick. Boom.
That's probably...
Fucking,
you know,
Greeks.
If they just got some cold compresses on Agrippa, he'd still be with us today. But... but here he is. Oh shit! It's like, oh fuck. Uh-oh. Sorry, I've been playing with this magnet lately, and when I drop it, it's bad. You know, they say, you know, the worst tragedy in life is to bury your child. Here he's burying the guy that was supposed to take over when he was gone. So not only has he lost his best friend, he's also lost his succession plan. Here, he's lost Marcellus, Now he's lost Agrippa. Now, accompanying the body on its journey back to Rome went his 12 lictors, the men who had travelled the world with him. But they had their fascies turned upside down as a mark of respect.
Ah.
I never knew they did that.
Yeah. So we do the flag at half mast, they turn the fascies upside down. Okay.
You know what they say, you know, if you're feeling sad, just turn your fascies upside down and you'll be happy again.
You have a smile instead of a frown.
Frown. Turn that up, fascies upside down.
Come on, everybody. Turn those fascies upside down.
I'm sure there should be a song to go with that, but I can't be bothered. Now, some of the history books, Ray, I don't know if you read this, but some of the books say that Augustus wasn't permitted to look upon the corpse because he was Pontifex Maximus.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my fucking God. No pun intended. He can't even look at his best friend who's gone because he is not allowed to, because I remember that happening to Julius Caesar when he was a kid and he was a Flamen Dialis. He could not look upon death.
But Dio disagrees with this. Dio writes, he also delivered the eulogy over the dead after first hanging a curtain in front of the corpse. Why he did this, I do not know. Some, however, have stated that it was because he was high priest. Others that it was because he was performing the duties of censor. But both are mistaken, since neither the high priest is forbidden to look at a corpse, nor the censor either, except when he is about to complete the census. But if he looks upon a corpse then, before his purification, all his work has to be done over again. Because, you know, if you look at a dead body when you're counting people, and then you look at a dead body, you may accidentally think they're just asleep and fuck up the figures, right?
So, you know. Fine. Two.
That's right. Get back to the beginning. Now, remarkably, part of Augustus's eulogy survives to this very fucking day.
Wow. Better not be Toto.
What?
No.
Don't give me any reason to play Toto, man, because you know I will. Don't unleash the Toto. I love how people constantly sending me links to cover versions of Toto on Facebook because I'm just now associated with people like, oh, I saw this and I thought of you. I love that. We have a fragment of a papyrus handwritten in Greek, probably a translation of the speech which would have been originally delivered in Latin. And it reads, the tribunician power was given to you for a period of 5 years by decree of the Senate in the consulship of the two Lentuli. And it was given to you again for another lustrum in the consulship of Tiberius Nero and Quintilius Varus, your relations by marriage. Moreover, it was sanctioned by a law that no one in any of the provinces into which the common affairs of the Roman people should call you would have greater imperium than you. You were raised to the highest position with our support and through your own virtues by the agreement of all men.
Oh.
So I think even in his eulogy here, Augustus is making the point that Agrippa rose to the highest level of power that anyone in Rome had since the days of the kings, at least, even higher than Julius Caesar, even higher than Pompey, higher than anyone except Augustus himself, and not because of his family name, not because of anything he inherited, not because of, you know, anything, really. Money, nothing. It's because of his deeds. Does that make him the first truly self-made man in history, do you think?
Ooh. I'm trying to think if there's anybody around Alexander's time. But yeah, because he came from very humble stock. Very humble family.
Well, yeah, maybe we could say guys like Ptolemy, as far as we know, came from fairly humble stock, although he ended up as a page boy in Philip's court, so was probably had some aristocracy somewhere, although we don't know, and ended up being a great king. I mean, it's hard to say, but...
Let me ask two questions. One, you've got to think in that speech, he probably listed all the amazing things that Agrippa did for the people who are listening to this very speech of people of Rome. And two, if you think about it, the higher that he raises and praises Agrippa, he's also raising and praising himself, because as high as you can praise Agrippa, there's only one person just a little bit above him. And of course, that's the man who's speaking. So not that he would have had to have done that, but I'm just imagining the politician in him had to be aware of that.
He's not Donald Trump, dude. If it was Donald Trump giving the eulogy, he would have been, you would have... Johnny Trump is a bit of the godfather. He was the greatest in the whole country, except for myself, of course. I'm the greatest. Everyone says that about me. I don't know if it's true, but it's probably true. I'm the greatest. But apart from me, Agrippa was, well, he was pretty good. I mean, I mean, obviously he wasn't as good as me. I'm the greatest, but he was okay. He was all right. He was pretty good. But, you know, I've done some fabulous things. Agrippa did some good things. That's true. But not compared to me. I've done some fabulous things. I'm terrific. I'm great. But Agrippa did some good things too. I guess you could say, well, he wasn't that great. Really?
He'll be missed.
Fuck him. He made some mistakes. I don't like him. Really?
but I'll be missed more.
Getting back to self-made man thing, now the more that I think about it, I mean, Julius Caesar, was he self-made? I mean...
He was born...
Yeah, he was born with the name.
But he started out on second base. Yeah.
I mean, and I know you're just happy to get to second base usually, but...
Second base, yeah! I just got to second base with myself.
And then we have Cicero. Cicero, right. I mean, he really... came from nothing, and he became consul.
He's more self-made than Caesar is.
Yeah, he is. So I guess Agrippa's obviously not the first self-made man in history, but is a self-made man. Or is he self-made? Because would you say he rode on the shirt tails of Augustus, or vice versa? Did Augustus
vice
ride
versa? That's what I was going to say. Yeah. He dragged that son of a bitch all the way to the number one position.
Yeah. I think he did. I honestly don't think Augustus would be Augustus if it wasn't for Agrippa. I mean, Agrippa just fucking had his back. Like, you could not
handle that shit.
You could not ask for a better friend / partner than Agrippa. He was the fucking ultimate. Like, never. Like, did he ever see? It didn't have a single black mark against his name that we're aware of. Not a single failure, not a single fuck up. Really, he was just perfection. He was the Messiah.
I was going to say, if it wasn't for him, Mark Antony would have beaten Augustus, but fuck that, Pompey's son, was it Sextus?
Sexy P.
Which one was the pirate?
Yeah, Sexy P.
Yeah, Sexy. I think he would have been able to, he had a decent chance of defeating Augustus without Agrippa there. So this story could have been so much different so many decades earlier if it wasn't for this man. So I totally agree.
Yeah. Anyway, keep going here. So there's his ashes were supposed to be placed, or his body was supposed to be placed in the mausoleum that he had built for himself, the campus on the Campus Martius. He built his own, Agrippa built his own sort of mausoleum. Yeah. But Augustus is like, well, look, it's pretty good, your mausoleum, but...
Because you are the wind beneath my wings, I'm going to put you in mine. Your will says put you in yours, but fuck that. I'm Augustus. You were going in mine. This is Livia singing.
It's Augustus.
Hitting a high note.
It must have been cold there in my shadow.
Not really. To never have
sunlight on your face. Well, actually, I was doing all right.
I'm not going to cry.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it was his way. You always walk a step behind. Well, he's behind the Lictors, but yeah.
Right, yeah. So I was the one with
all the glory. Yep, yep, checks it's, out. This song is fucking about Augustus and Agrippa.
Yeah, burly. Double I would say work. Burly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Beautiful face
without a name. Well, he had a name. Well,
I had a name.
Come on.
Fuck like Agrippa.
No one remembers it. I don't think there's any pain. I think he
there's
loved
no pain
he
here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you ever know that you're
my hero? Oh, yeah, no, no, not really. No. Yeah, I did. And everything I would like to be. I'm pretty sure he knew that. Yeah. You,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can fly higher than an eagle. Roman eagle on the standards.
Right. Actually, I don't know.
Fuck me, people! You never ever knew that that song, Bette Midler, was
right.
fucking writing about Augustus and Agrippa. Right.
Yeah, I said,
oh
meet
my
you.
God.
Yes. Yes.
Oh. Hey, do you. Do,
I need to smoke.
Do your Eagles impersonation for me again.
The birds of war!
Not responding to the pageantry
the
at all.
The whole second verse is completely ridiculous.
The second verse is necessary to clarify what we
we're
are.
Mic'd. At. We're mic'd.
We're not.
Our microphones are on.
Are they hearing this?
Do this routine.
Go.
Oh, fuck. I love that.
We should have dressed up like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, word power.
Wind beneath my wings. Oh, my God. Yeah. I can't believe that.
Right on the button.
So
I'm emotionally spent. I'm done for the night.
Yeah, well, doesn't take much. Take another blue pill. Yeah, so Augustus has Agrippa's remains placed in an urn in his own mausoleum, and it's probably still there to this very day.
Road trip.
Dio writes, such was the end of Agrippa, who had in every way clearly shown himself the noblest of the men of his day, and had used the friendship of Augustus with a view to the greatest advantage both of the emperor himself and of the commonwealth. For the more he surpassed others in excellence, the more inferior he kept himself of his own free will to the emperor. And while he devoted all the wisdom and valor he himself possessed to the highest interests of Augustus, he lavished all the honor and influence he received from him upon benefactions to others. It was because of this in particular that he never became obnoxious to Augustus himself, nor invidious to his fellow citizens. On the contrary, he helped Augustus to establish the monarchy, as if he were really a devoted adherent to the principle of autocratic rule, and he won over the people by his benefactions, as if he were in the highest degree a friend of popular government.
Damn. I mean, so yeah, but he just checked himself paths. Constantly for the betterment of this man, and it worked fine for both of them. It worked fabulous for both of them.
And as we've talked about, you know, he spent all of the money and the wealth that he amassed because of his success and his victories. He spent it on the people. He made their lives immeasurably better with his public works. And so you can't hate him. He's like, well, you know, he's not a cunt. He's like, okay, he's successful, but look at all the shit that he's done for us. Like free haircuts. Who does that? Who does that?
He's the opposite of a cunt. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
A dick. Well, no, that's no good either. We can't call him a dick. I don't know. He's Barbie. He's Barbie. That's what he is. Whatever Barbie has down there. Like just
okay.
He's a Barbie doll. But in the days which followed, you're going to love this because we haven't had any omens and portents for a while, Ray. There were omens and portents seen across the city. Things have been going too well. People have been missing the omens and the portents. The birds. What happened to the birds in Rome? For 20 years, there's been no birds. Birds have been doing shit. Good for nothing, these fucking birds. They're supposed to be...
shit over the statues.
They're supposed to be delivering all omens and portents. Nothing. They've just gone on strike, the birds. They're like, oh, Augustus is here. We can take a break. We don't need to portent anything. The birds used to get around the bar and now they go, what did you do today? Do any portenting? No, I've given up portenting.
Don't worry. I didn't get up till 11.
Dio writes, the death of Agrippa, far from being merely a private loss to his own household, was at any rate such a public loss to all the Romans that portents occurred on this occasion in such numbers as usually happened only for the greatest calamities. Owls kept flitting about the city. Oh, fuck me. That's no good. You don't want owls. Come on. Come on, Dio. That's the best you can come up with. There were owls flying around.
Ooh,
oh, well, that's a... Look at that. Owls. That's a portent, really? What is it a portent of? There's lots of mice in the city? Like, fucking... What? Why is that a portent? And lightning struck the house on the Alban Mount where the consuls lodged during the sacred rites. Okay.
That's something. I'll take it. Yeah.
Months after Agrippa's death.
Oh, you can't count this.
Yeah, fuck it. That's, come on. There's a statute of limitations here, Dio.
Thank you.
On how long you can, you know, call this a portent.
Right.
Anyway,
but go ahead.
The star called the Comet hung for several days over the city and was finally dissolved into flashes resembling torches. Many buildings in the city were destroyed by fire, among them the hut of Romulus, which was set ablaze by crows that dropped upon it burning meat from some altar.
I'm sorry.
Fucking what?
Crows don't carry burning meat. That's science.
I don't know. Have we ever done a detailed study on this, Ray? I think we need to sponsor a detailed scientific study on whether or not crows carry burning meat.
Right. And if they do, for how long?
The hut of Romulus, the Casa Romuli, also known as the Tugurium Romuli, was supposedly the dwelling place of the founder and first king of Rome, Romulus. It was situated on the southwestern corner of the Palatine Hill. Supposedly, it was this tiny little peasant's hut, single room, with a straw roof and wattle and daub walls. It's just like mud and twigs, really.
Okay.
That they had kept in its original state. It was continuously destroyed by fire and storms, and they would rebuild it in its original state just to remember, look where we came from. See that little mud hut? That's where we came from.
Yeah. If you've replaced it 17 times, just replace it one more time and shut the fuck up. Move on.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm impressed with the light. I'm impressed with the lightning. The owls were obviously carrying mail to Hogwarts, but this here, it sounds like the hut's caught on fire a lot over the last 300 or 400 years. I'm not as impressed as I should be, I guess.
Right. You're saying no connection between it being destroyed and Agrippa's demise.
Can't see it. Right. Can't see it.
By the way, you might wonder what happened to it. I did. Last mentioned in 78 CE. After that, no more mention. We don't know what happened to it.
They quit rebuilding it.
I guess.
Yeah.
So,
so we're not going to look that up on our trip next year.
No, don't go looking for that. They have been looking. No, it has been a thing. There has been you know, right, archaeological attempts to figure it out, but nothing so far. Because it's gotcha, made of fucking right, straw and sticks. Yeah. But yeah, it's not going to be around 2,000 years later. Right. A few days after the funeral, Agrippa's will was read out, Ray.
Aww.
You want to talk about that?
Well, I just think it's apropos that Augustus was the main beneficiary of almost everything Agrippa did. Why should it be any different in his death? So, yeah, so out of all the lands that Agrippa owned, and I don't think I truly appreciated what he owned, most of it is going to go back to his father-in-law, Augustus. He owned a lot of gardens and his bath complex on the Campus Martius. That went to the Roman people, and some of his estates, he had plenty of them, would pay revenue from that, would pay for the upkeep. And supposedly Agrippa wanted every Roman male citizen, or at least those within Rome at that particular moment of his death, to have 400 sesterces. Not a bad deal there. But again, I mean, the vast majority of his wealth, the vast majority of his holdings went back to his father-in-law, who obviously owns more than Agrippa does. So we can only imagine the wealth that this one human being controlled, possessed, and made decisions on. I just cannot imagine the wealth that Augustus has at this point.
Yeah, but Agrippa passes all of his estates, including his private estates in Egypt and Sicily and Thrace, to Augustus, but Augustus immediately declares them all public land and says, you know, they're going to be open to the people, and I'm going to pay for their upkeep, because that's what Agrippa really would have wanted. He wanted it to be bequeathed to the Roman people, along with the park that he created on the Campus Martius and the baths which he had created. Didn't want people to be stinky after he died. So, you know, he's donating all of that to the people, which is typical Agrippa. He, even in death, he is just thinking about what can he do for the people of Rome.
Well, yeah, I just remember 20, 30 years ago, we were talking about Agrippa and Augustus doing something for the people, for the people of Rome. One, maybe to calm them down, because they're about to have, you know, the nobles are about to have a lot of power taken away. Maybe they want to calm these people down so they won't support a civil war if someone tries to rise up. But at the end of the day, you have to get past that cynicism and realize these two guys who thought they of the Roman people were better than everyone else on the planet, and they should have a higher standard of living. And these guys spent tremendous amounts of money fulfilling that promise, even if it's a promise they made to themselves, because no one was asking them to do it. But again, I mean, in very real world, practical ways, the daily lives of these people were improved, and these guys just spent a lot of time and money on it. And even that kind of selflessness is staggering, is mind-boggling, even, you know, compared up till today, because it just doesn't happen like that anymore.
Yeah. The sheer scale of his activities outstripped any other Roman aristocrat, living or dead, except, of course, Augustus himself.
Right. That's because Agrippa stuck his name on, Augustus's name on the side of everything that he built.
This has been brought to you by
Augustus and Agrippa. So he tacked on his name. If he had a statue, there was a statue of Augustus as well. But again, that's what he did.
He should have just written A. This building is brought to you by
A squared.
See, that would have solved everything. At one point, people complained to Augustus that wine was too expensive, and his reply was that Agrippa had already given them plenty of water to drink when he built them aqueducts.
Nap.
So shut the fuck up. What do you want?
Water is the stuff of life. You have tons of it for free. Shut the fuck up.
Augustus also inherited Agrippa's slaves, who assumed the cognomen Agrippianus. Ooh. And after Augustus then freed them, which is what Agrippa would have wanted, they could pass on that name to their children. So you ended up with slaves running around with the name Agrippianus in honor of their slave master. And you have to imagine he was probably a pretty good slave master. Don't you think?
As long as you worked. Yeah.
I reckon he would have been a pretty... I mean, if I had to be a slave...
Shit. If I had to be owned by somebody, I'd like it to be Agrippa.
I think it'd be Agrippa. I mean, you'd probably get... He'd put you to work a lot. All right, what are we doing today, boss? Massa? What are we doing today, Massa? Building
you're
an aqueduct.
Work your ass off.
All right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I know. I mean, I'm going to be worked hard, but I know I'm doing it for the good of the Roman people. Right. Not just. By the way, the citizens, like the slaves, get to drink the water too. I assume that's at true. Some point,
quality unless, of life. Yeah.
Unless your master is that guy that used to feed his slaves to the fucking.
He was a cunt.
Lampreys.
He was a Roman cunt. Roman cunt.
Yeah. Where were we? Oh, yeah, cotton slaves. Yeah. Yes. Now, the ramifications of Agrippa's death were far-reaching, well beyond Rome, some good and some bad. When King Herod the Great got the message, which wasn't until 12 BCE in Judea, he immediately set off for Rome to pay his respects and also to suck up to Augustus, I suspect, as well. But one thing that I didn't really fully appreciate is King Herod and Agrippa were pretty good friends.
Really?
New season of Curb Your Enthusiasm starts October 1st, just FYI.
Can't wait. Yeah.
I know. It can be huge. Agrippa apparently was someone that Herod felt he could confide in. And, you know, they were close allies. Agrippa was a vigilant champion of Jewish rights. Protected their quasi-independence because they were still independent at this stage, more or less, as we've explained. They were independent as long as, a bit like the senators in Rome, they're free to do whatever you want within certain constraints.
As long as you know that, come on. Yeah.
So Agrippa went to Rome, paid his respects, had a chat with Augustus, went back and built a new city...
Right.
That he called Agrippius.
Damn.
And 2 years later, he has a grandson. What does he call his grandson, Ray?
Herod Agrippa.
Well, it was actually Julius Agrippa, I think. Julius Agrippa.
Damn.
Yeah.
See, the Bible led me astray.
Yeah.
So if you and I were...
But he is the future King Agrippa of Judea. So if you've ever been reading your Bible and you hear them talk about King Agrippa and you're like, what the fuck? Because that's what I did when I first read it. I was like, what the fuck? How did Agrippa end up as King of Judea?
He's a Jew?
Yeah. Sorry. He's named... Oh, that explains it. He's a Jew. No. He was Herod's grandson, named in honor of Herod's very good friend Agrippa.
Right. Hypothetical. We are in the moment of passion, our throes of passion, the beast with two backs, if you will, and someone stabs a sarissa through both of us because of our proximity. We die, and they name a city after us. What do you think it would be?
Cam and Rainianus.
Cam and Ray Zanus.
Yeah, I was trying to be a bit more subtle about it, you know. Okay. You can go there. Cam and Ray Zanus.
Anyway, I don't. Yeah, I like that. Hopefully it won't happen, but I if it does, I like that.
Yeah. So Agrippa's gone. Taurus, probably also dead by now. We don't know. Maecenas, no longer really playing a role on the political front in Rome. He's still around, but not for much longer.
Aww.
So the old generation, the OGs of the New Rome,
right,
nearly all gone except for the man at the top of the pyramid. But there is... shit, hold on. But there is... No, wait for it. Fuck. No.
But there is.
But there is a next generation.
Make it so. 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 Make it so.
Make it so.
Make it so. Make it so. Make it
so. What, fuck, don't want to play that again. So there is a next generation. That's what Augustus says to them. Just right. Make it so. Make it so.
Make it so.
Make it so. Yeah. He has...
Go
on.
I was going to say, ironically, based off that clip that you just played, one of those that is the up-and-coming is James Tiberius Kirk. Little known fact.
What? Yeah, but he wasn't the next generation. He was the OG generation.
Well, he was still
generation.
Star Trek. I was in the fucking
general
realm.
He wasn't up and coming when Picard was running around saying, make it so. He was
pull your head in.
Long gone, man.
Yeah. Okay, fine.
Your fucking... Yeah, look, I don't even watch Star Trek, and I know that the chronology is
it was still
the other way
Trek
around.
Land. Still Trek-ish.
Trek-ish. Where Trek-ish. Are you up to in Doctor Who, by the way?
Stuck on... Season 2.
Oh, really? Okay, you're a long way behind.
Yeah. Game of Thrones.
Right.
Yeah.
Now he has this new generation, the two Claudii, which we'll get to the importance of that in an upcoming episode. This is, of course, Tiberius and Drusus, who are the older of his... stepsons, adopted sons, all these fake sons that he has, to step into the role.
Right.
Because he's still got things to do. Yeah. He's got wars to prosecute. He's got parts of the empire to be managed.
Yeah, I mean, if you've been given a five-year, if your five-year command has been renewed, you feel like maybe you have to justify that or at least show that it's not completely hollow. Plus he has plans. He doesn't know how long he's going to live, but he's got two guys in their 20s and then he's got the two younger kids that he's adopted, Lucius and Caius. So he's got a stable full of people to follow behind him, but he's still got stuff to do. He's got to put the death of Agrippa aside. And he does have general plans because almost everywhere in his empire, he has peace like Rome has never known before. But there's a little bit of trouble to the north and slightly to the east, northeast. Stuff's got to be handled, and he's got Tiberius and he's got Drusus for that.
But also, as we've talked about in recent episodes, you can't trust your proconsuls and your propraetors out in the provinces because they're a bunch of fucking, dumb nuts. And so... he and Agrippa had to travel around just to keep an eye on these useless twats that were running things out in the provinces. Now he himself never again left Italy. From this point on, Augustus remains more or less in Italy.
He's going to move around and he's going to go to the edge, but his days of long year, 2 year tours are over. That's for the younger people to do. It's just something he's not going to do anymore. He'll just kind of jump up there, take a look, get some letters from whatever region and come back. It's just time for him to put that kind of gallivanting behind him.
Yeah, because if something happens to him, these younger generation aren't ready. Yet he doesn't have Agrippa as backup.
They're getting there, right? They're getting there, but not yet. They're only in their 20s.
Yeah,
yeah. Theoretically.
Moving forwards, he's going to have to rely on Tiberius and Drusus to do the hard work, the grunt work, the Agrippa work, the Charlie work. Right. If you watch Always Sunny.
Yeah. Yeah. And but if you think about it, I mean, it's a two-way street. They get experience. They get used to very other powerful men in Rome listening to them. And because one day they're going to be leading large armies and they need to get used to high command and they need to be able to add onto their resume. So it's good for the empire. It's good for Augustus to have someone else doing it who's got a stronger, younger back. And it's good for these guys. So one day when they do rule in whatever position, they can point to a long list of accomplishments like Agrippa and people will follow them.
Now, of course, getting back to Agrippa passing on most of his wealth to Augustus. Of course, Augustus has adopted Agrippa's children.
Mm-hmm.
Well, two of them anyway. Now, the best way to pass his wealth on to his children is to give it to Augustus. Not that I think Augustus needs it, really.
He's but, okay.
You know, if we go back and remember Agrippa's three marriages, he was first married to Pomponia, the daughter of Atticus, who was very wealthy. Then he married Augustus's niece, Marcella, and then finally, of course, he married Augustus's own daughter, Julia. So three marriages. He had married well. He'd married into good families. Politics and family obviously went hand in hand in Rome. And as we'll see, family is taking on a new significance in Augustus's Rome, obviously, as he is building something akin to a monarchy here, he has to promote the role of the family, the importance of family in a whole new light compared to how it was normally treated in Rome. We know that in years gone by, power and titles and offices couldn't be passed down to your family members because they were temporary. The auctoritas of your family name was inherited. The wealth was inherited, but you didn't pass on a consulship. But things have to be different now.
Right.
Because we can't go back to the old ways.
And you've just got to think that this is obviously years ago when Marcellus died. It did seem that Agrippa was grooming him for something. I don't know if we just want to come out and say successor or whatever, but you have to think that the death of this very young man married to his daughter had to shake Agrippa to his core. And so he's thinking, I need, because this is, you know,
Augustus.
The BC.
Augustus,
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. So, yeah, but people die of illnesses, of things all the time. Look at Agrippa. I need a stable of young men to come behind me. I can't rely on one person because they could drop dead like Agrippa, who seemed perfectly healthy. Like you said, he adopted Lucius and Cassius. He did not adopt Tiberius and Drusus, but he's certainly using them. But he needs a group of young men behind him to take over once he is no more, because they might die in battle, they might die of disease or whatever. He needs more than just one or two people. He needs a stable full of people ready to take over.
There's a clip, Rob Irwin, just go back a minute, when Ray said, I need a stable of young men to come behind me. Just a clip for the next intro.
All by itself.
Yeah.
Just that right there.
Just repeated.
Okay. Thanks, Cam.
Repeated with a beat.
Anyway.
Now, as we know, his family, Augustus's family, have already been given very special recognition and accelerated careers. His wife, his sister, his adopted sons, his stepsons, they've all been given special treatment that no one in years gone by, well, not no one, but very few people in years gone by have received. You know, we know that Julius Caesar gave young Brutus a little bit of early advancement, those sorts of things, but nothing like we've seen happen with Augustus and his family. You know, he may have complained when the crowd cheered for young Caius, as I think you said earlier, but he made sure that his family was treated special. He didn't want people to cheer for them because they hadn't accomplished anything, but at the same time, he wanted to make sure that they were being protected and looked after and given special privileges and special benefits. if for no other reason than, as you said, he knows he's not going to live forever and he needs to get them protected. If something happens to him, he needs to make sure that they are protected, that they are sanctified so they mm-hmm. can't be attacked or killed, and that his sons, stepsons and adopted sons, as quickly as possible, have as much leadership experience, are able to build a bond with the army, build a reputation for being capable men, capable leaders, because otherwise everything he has spent 30 years building will disappear overnight.
Yeah, he needs his family to be seen as natural leaders, as special. The women are already sacrosanct, his wife and his sister. The two older boys are getting a lot of experience. Like you said, if they can win over the army and the people in general love his wife and his sister and think of them as special and know that they're not allowed to legally hurt them, I mean, he is doing everything he can to set the stage for this group of people, not an individual, but this group of people to take over. And they're going to have to work it out themselves, but this group of people to take over once he is no more. He is doing everything he can, because like you said, what's the point of busting your ass for 30 years and losing your friend who might have worked himself to death, who knows, to lose it all after you're gone? He's got to set this up for the long haul.
Yes. Now, nowhere is Augustus's family more prominent than on the Arapaxis Augustae.
Nice.
On the 4th of July, 13 BCE, the Senate obviously celebrated America's Independence Day. They went to see Will Smith defeat the aliens.
Hell yeah.
By hacking their computer with a MacBook.
Shoot that shit, green shit at me. Yeah, go ahead.
And then they also decreed the building of the Arapaxis Augustae, the Altar of Augustan Peace, which was built in the Campus Martius. Now, I fucking kid you not, it survives to this very day, and you can go mm-hmm. see it. We will go see it on our Cayman Rays Tour de Amour next year.
I'm going to run my hand across it, lick it, probably dry hump it. I am looking forward to this. And Rob, you better not use any of that. Everybody get ready to join in.
You nearly lost me right then and there. I nearly agrippid. Fucking trying to hit those notes.
Do you have a song about spending time in an Italian jail? Because that's what's going to happen next.
Anyway. When you lick it, yeah.
When I lick it.
Yeah. And when you have a group of, what is it? A group of young men come behind you. Oh, there's probably clubs in Rome where you can pay to have that done.
And, exactly.
You'll probably be surrounded by judges and politicians.
Don't judge me.
Now, the Arapaxis Augustae was designed to resemble the Temple of Janus because it had a hole at each end.
Right. No.
It was made of marble.
Yeah.
Featured exquisite carved friezes of Augustus and his family and other things. And no one really seems to understand the purpose of it today. It's still debated. There's one idea that it was some sort of, it was depicting some sort of formal Thanksgiving commemorating Augustus's victories in 13 BCE, which would include the victories that he just had pacifying Gaul, and then the, I guess, the victories in Illyricum when Agrippa just gave him a hard look and they crapped themselves. It was, it could have been,
celebrate that.
That could have been one of the 55 public thanksgivings that were awarded to him, which added up to 890 days of public thanksgiving he had accrued.
Damn. They lost years of their lives partying because of this guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What a way to go. Yeah, bigger, like you said, bigger, I think you just said it, bigger than the JC. So yeah, just a ton of thanksgiving for this guy. And yeah, you have to do something big and monumental to show that we truly have peace in our time thanks to this now one man. And so yeah, you've got to build some kind of some way to remember that.
So Augustus and his entire family appear on this thing, as well as other senators, as well as some priests. Augustus appears taller than everyone else, which, of course, is probably not realistic. Right. But unlike you might expect, he's not a giant like a pharaoh or some great king would want to be depicted. He's an inch. He's an inch tall.
Just enough.
Just to attract the attention of the eye. Agrippa is also slightly taller than everyone else. So Augustus and Agrippa are the focus points of this. There's a ton of people on this thing. You can go look at pictures on Wikipedia, and I'll post them on Facebook and that kind of stuff. Go and check these things out. It's quite astounding, these sculptures. But these guys slightly bigger than everyone else. Agrippa, I read in one of the books that Agrippa has a fold of his toga over his head. I couldn't see that. When I looked at the pictures of it, I couldn't make that out. Could you? Did you look? Did you care? You don't care.
Yeah, I got a bunch of pictures, and I put a video of on the Facebook, this Life of Caesar, Life of Augustus Facebook, when Mussolini was taking his tour through it. But no, I couldn't see that, and I know it's been redone several times since then. But yeah, I was certainly looking for those two and could not find it.
What do you mean redone? I mean, it's been reconstructed.
Touched up and put back together because they had to find pieces and put it back together. But I'm just saying I couldn't find him. I'm sure it's changed over time.
No, I can tell. I can see Agrippa and Augustus. I just couldn't see the fold of his toga over his head. But anyway, there's a suggestion that if that is there, it might have been a sign that he had died before the sculpture was completed, which it would have been because it wasn't completed for several years, obviously. They only commissioned it in 13 BCE. It took like 4 years to get built. There's a small boy tugging at Agrippa's toga and looking behind him up at Livia, who pats the little boy on the head, maybe to calm him. Little boy's like, "My daddy, he dead." And she's like, "It's okay. You're Augustus's adopted son. It's okay." Yeah. Livia's there. Antonia is there talking to her husband Drusus, who's wearing a military cloak. There's a bunch of kids. And apparently this is one of the really interesting things. The depiction of women and children on a sculpture like this, they're not goddesses or kid gods. These are just, I mean, yes, they're sort of the aristocracy. They're Augustus's family. But it's very unusual to have a sculpture with women and children in it at the time. So that's one of the notable things about this.
Yeah. And it's also, what else is notable is just the relaxed manner. I mean, like you said, there's one looking at another one, one's talking to somebody, they're touching the head of the child. It's not like they're all stiff and straight and looking forward. I mean, they're interacting with each other. So this is a family, this is casual time together. And again, having women and children on there, this is not something that you would see in Rome. But again, this is Augustus going, this is my family. These are the people who are the leaders of Rome, and you should see us. You should think of us as different, as unique, as special.
Yeah. You know what it is, I think?
What's that?
I think it's the equivalent of the wedding scene from The Godfather. You know, you're just seeing all of the people, the family, the Godfather and his family. You're just seeing the Godfather and he's enjoying his family. They're just hanging out. They're chatting. There's kids running around. Bit of dancing going on. There's Sonny banging the chick up against the door.
doing his thing.
Doing his thing. You know, it's just you know, regular life. And they've depicted that on a marble frieze. Because Augustus is all about family. That's what they're saying here. He's all about his family, love of family. He wants Rome to think about family. He wants the elite to think about raising good Romans, building a strong elite. You know, take Augustus's example. You know, even if you can't have kids, adopt other people's kids.
Yeah, fucking take them away. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get rid of the cat. Put the cat down. Go get yourself a baby. As the Bluth family always said, Bluth family, you know, family first. And he got it from Augustus.
And there's always money in the banana stand. I think that was one of Agrippa's sayings.
Love that show.
Me too. They're making another season, I heard.
Yes.
For Netflix. It's awesome. Absolutely awesome. Yeah, so it's difficult for us to figure out today who a lot of the people are on these freezes. But obviously they would have been fairly obvious to people back in the day. I mean, they all look relatively generic to me, but I'm sure there were little hints back in the day so everyone at the time could tell who they were. Caius and Lucius Caesar, the sons of Agrippa, adopted by Augustus, are depicted wearing Gallic torque necklaces, which we talked about in a way fucking early episode, like 100 episodes ago, 150 episodes ago.
So you probably remember it, everybody.
Yeah, these are the special necklaces, big, heavy, gold, twisted things that the Gauls wore. This is because the young boys, as you may remember, had recently ridden in the Trojan Games, which was a great sort of honor, coming of age thing in a way. So they were depicted wearing those. We don't even know who the sculptor was, but it's very Greek in style.
Right. They Greek the hell out of it. So it was either Greek influence or Greek sculptor, but who knows?
Yeah. Now, on the other walls that don't have Augustus and his family, there are depictions of Romulus, Remus, Aeneas, bulls being prepared for sacrifices, all of that good shit showing that Rome, all the stuff that Augustus has been working towards, you know, remembering where we came from, remembering our heritage, being good religious observant Romans by sacrificing the bulls. We're worshipping our ancestors, where it's all about family, it's all about peace. All this kind of good stuff is being...
Rome is great again.
Depicted in his new temple. That's right. Make Rome great again. Now, over the years, unfortunately, where it was built on this particular area on the Campus Martius, it was sort of a floodplain. And over the years, it became buried in silt during floods to eventually it was buried under 4 meters of silt deposits.
Damn.
And, of course, no, after the fall of Rome, etc., the sack of Rome, no one gave a shit. And it was rediscovered in 1568. Parts of it were. Somebody went, oh, look, there's some marble. All right, well, fucking, we don't care because we're, you know, in the middle of, well, we're late stage Renaissance now. We're not really interested in that. Bits of it were sort of discovered over the years, and there was talk in the early 20th century of maybe having it excavated and reconstructed. But as you pointed out, who do we have to thank for the reconstruction of it?
Fucking Mussolini.
Fucking Mussolini. Was that his full name?
Well, no, see, everybody knows that... Hitler, through his SS, tried to get the Ark of the Covenant to make his armies invincible. So Mussolini was going to dig up and redo this and put it in a nice, beautiful glass building, this Ark of Peace, to tie his current fascist empire to the great Roman Republic. And not peace, but the rebuilt Roman Republic, Roman Empire, because he was going to take all of Africa and he was going to take parts of France and whatever. So in September of 1938, it was all done. They put all the pieces together, and the parts that they couldn't find, they put little drawings where something should be, and they reconstituted the Ark, put it all together, and Mussolini visited, and I put a video of that on the Facebook page. But because of, we have Mussolini to thank, because he focused the powers of the state to assembling. They had to dig a lot of the stuff up and put it all together. They got cheap at the end and put it kind of in a shitty glass building, but the work, as far as the Ark itself, is actually quite impressive. They did a very good job.
And you can see it today in the Museum of the Arapacis in Rome. And I know a lot of our listeners have been there. They've posted photos of it before up on Facebook.
So come and watch us lick it, love it, learn it. Next year, we're going to have a great time.
Yeah. And yeah. Be one of the group of young boys that comes on Ray's back. You too. You're going to pay extra for that.
You have to. I've already looked into it. You have to pay extra.
Now, as I said, the altar wasn't completed and dedicated until 9 BCE. There are three generations of Augustus's family up there. But Augustus, of course, 50 at the time, looks 21. Of course,
a youthful 21.
A youthful 21. But I think more than ever right now, it must have been evident to everyone that he's not going to live forever. He must have been conscious of his own mortality now more than he had been maybe for 20 years. And he has to start thinking about who's going to take over when he dies. And I think that is something we will talk about in the next episode, Ray.
Sounds good.
Let me read another review. This one is from Australia. This is from NJC1000. He or she writes, I've been listening to Ray and Cam for a couple of years now, and their humour and love of history have greatly helped the grim daily commute to the coal mine / office. The humour is, shall we say, not for the easily offended, but at least they know where to draw the line. All right, no, they don't know where to draw the line, and that, dear friends, is what makes this podcast special. Thanks, Ray and Cam. You are the GOAT. Well, thank you, NJC1000. Do you know what the GOAT is, Ray?
I can do an eagle sound. I can't do a goat. You're going to have to help me with this one. I'm the GOAT. The greatest of all time. The greatest of all time. Yeah. The greatest of all time. Hell yeah. The greatest of all time. Oh, yeah. I'm the GOAT. The greatest of all time. Yeah. I was on the movie set, Benny hit me on the cell. Niggas out here talking about the king of rap fell where? Don't these niggas know I'm LL? Let me run and do this album, tell Spielberg chill. A jet hit LaGuardia at 6 in the morn. Benny waiting in the Bentley with the blend tapes on. Straight to the studio, dirty, no shower. Blew out 5 mics in the first half hour. Niggas know who about to get all the dough. Who about to hit all your homes? Who about to spit all the flows? That's all I can stand. I can't stand no more. I like the fact now that we can say in all of our promotional material, right, this podcast has been called the greatest of all time. We can say that, like that. Quite legitimately. Right.
Yeah, I like that.
So goat, as in it's a tough animal. I'm still reaching.
The greatest of all time. G-O-A-T.
Oh.
LL just sang it to you. I'm the GOAT, the greatest of all time.
I have a hard time with thug rappers and studios. I think that's awesome. I'm on board now. I'm on board. Thank you for spelling it out.
Should we talk like this? I know you're 51 now, Ray, but come on. And this is hour two. Hold on.
Into the good ear. Okay, say it.
All right, we're out.
And the complete idiots are back.
We're the Skivvies.
Fuck, let me start again.
Fuck me, Ray.
Yeah. Right there with you, brother. No, I'm just joking.
Gaul.
Mm-hmm.
Hispania. Like Glenn and Cohen, they really took time with their craft.
It's really becoming impersonal.
That's all you need.
Just don't die.
Don't be a cunt and don't die.
You can't really trust anybody else. Woo! He said proudly.
My brain is melting!